Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast. My name is Brian Sippets. Sorry for the delay between episodes here. I got bumped off my stride a little bit, but we're back in action now. We should be getting back to you, getting an episode out every 2 weeks here or so. Hopefully we're bringing you great conversations and you're getting a lot of value out of these. Today we're talking to Joey Garland, formerly the strength conditioning coach for the Windsor Spitfires in the OHL. He's doing some other stuff, and although he doesn't say it in the interview, you guys are gonna know the name of the place that he's opening in Windsor this fall. So pretty exciting stuff for Joey there. We end up talking about youth development, and I think the reason that we had him on in the first place, the reason I was attracted to this conversation, is because he did his master's degree, did his master's thesis actually on youth development and working specifically with hockey players. So really exciting conversation. We actually ended up going a little bit long. I had no idea how long it had gotten, but really a great conversation with Joey, and he's got a great mindset. I think some of the highlights, you know, we talk about not only about youth development, and you know, we talk about the things that people normally blame for the lack of youth development these days, but not just that. We go a little bit more into what is the actual plan, like what should we do. It's easy to bitch and moan about what's wrong, but let's get into some actual solutions here, and Joey's got a pretty good one, I think, for you. So hopefully you enjoy this conversation. This is episode 73. If you haven't been to HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com lately, go ahead and check it out. If you haven't joined us yet, you can join for just a buck for the first 7 days. After that, we know you're going to love the content, so you can stick with us. $14.95 a month if you go monthly. If you sign up for the whole year, you basically get 2 months free. And so that's our gift for you for being loyal learners in the hockey strength and conditioning world. So we'd love to see you on the site if that's a part of your professional development. These podcasts will always be free, so we hope to bring you some great content here. And let's go ahead and get on the phone for episode 73. We'll get on the phone with Joey Garland, formerly of the Windsor Spitfires, and let's get rolling. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the 73rd episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Joey Garland, formerly strength and conditioning coach of the Windsor Spitfires in the OHL. He's just recently taken an opportunity where he's going to be on the private side, so we'll have some things to talk about there. But Joey, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Great. It's my first podcast, so I'm excited to get going.
Yeah, well, it's interesting too. I mean, you're somebody that I kind of just literally bumped into. We were at the IYCA summit together this past spring here in Detroit. And, you know, you're not far away in Windsor there. So just walking around the summit there, and I saw your Spitfire shirt and struck up a conversation, and turns out we have a lot to talk about here. So, you know, I think one of the big reasons we wanted to have you on, or I wanted to grab you here, was because as we were talking, it, you know, kind of figured out that you're a long-term athlete development guy, which I think a lot of young strength coaches are understanding more and more about now. But you actually had done your master's thesis on it. So talk a little bit about your thesis and how you ended up, you know, talking about long-term athlete development and what you found in your thesis.
Yeah, through my work with the Windsor Spitfires, I also do the athletic therapy, did the athletic therapy. So I was seeing a lot of injuries creep into the sport and to the players that shouldn't be there at that age. We're talking 16 to 20 year olds. So disc herniations, hip surgeries, hernias, things that like really shouldn't pop up in that population. So as I dug a little bit further in, I was finding out kids were just playing hockey and only hockey, literally not being able to throw baseballs or footballs because they had never done it. So that kind of led me down the more academic route. As I started to look into it, long-term athletic development obviously is becoming hugely popular right now, as it's a problem in a lot of sports. So I reached out to a couple of professors at the local university, and there was some interest there as well. So I kind of went down that long, arduous path. So I looked at I looked at the developmental activities of OHL players or former OHL players. So some of which ended up in the NHL, some of which retired after the OHL, but there was 15 in-depth interviews for about two and a half hours each, where we really dug into the nuts and bolts of when they started, when they started practice, when they started their play, when they started competing, what other activities they were engaged in throughout their lifespan, right up until they started in the OHL, which I, for research purposes, I considered that an elite level, because it is it's pretty high level here in Canada. So we, my professors and I were still waiting to get a couple things published, but it was interesting. I was interested to find that most of the kids, I'll call them, in this study, they had started being specialized at the age of 12. So by 12 years old, they were specialized, pretty generic term now. I would say invested, it's probably a better term. That's all they did. They had quit all other activities for the most part, maybe a school sport for a couple hours a week, but for the most part, hockey was all they did 12 months a year at 12 years old. Mm.
And so, of course, you know, you're going to start to see overuse injuries. You're going to start to see a little bit of burnout, you know, and so there's like psychological and, you know, physical things and issues that pop up with all of that. You know, when you say, what kind of like level of training? So like 12 years old, are these kids that not only are they playing, they're competing, and that's, are they in intense training this whole time?
Yeah, that's about 40 hours a week at that stage. So wow. Between competing, practicing, working out, by then a lot has started mental skills training, things like that, that a high level, we call it almost professional athlete would be doing and engaging in. That's why at 12 years old on average, that they were participating in, because they viewed that age as the age at which they needed to make a decision whether or not they were going to be a professional athlete or not. And especially like hockey, it's a combat sport. So, right, collision sport. So the relative age effect really plays in there. And at 12 years old, that's grade seven, like some of these kids still haven't hit puberty, so they don't really know what sport they're going to be good at.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's one of the biggest issues, is that you just don't know, you know, and what 12-year-old is. I mean, you'll ask, I'd say 90% of 12-year-olds would say, yeah, I want to play in the NHL, but they have really no idea what that's going to be like, or what that trip is going to be like. Did you notice any difference between the guys who ended up in the NHL and the ones who were done after the OHL? In terms of their participation,
it was too hard to compare. That was something I wanted to compare, but with the sample size being only 15, because it was kind of a blend of qualitative and quantitative research, at 15, there wasn't really enough in either pool to make a differentiation between the two groups. My main comparison group was from a study in 2001 by Soberlak and Cote. Again, Canadian researchers, they interviewed the same interview script for OHL players. So I wanted to compare 17 years later, how much play, how much competition, age of engagement, things like that, and how they compared to each other. And the play was drastically reduced, the age at which competition started. They actually started their script at age six. And that was one of my recommendations going forward, is that script needs to start almost at age three, which obviously you would have to get parental, some parental involvement there, because you can't expect anyone to remember that age. But because that's when most kids had started competition, was at the age of three. So the script at six, all had started competition, all had started practicing. Not all were at that high level yet, at that AAA level, but most had competed in one or two age groups up in that AAA level.
When you say script, explain that a little bit more. You know, when you said they started their script at 6 years old.
Yeah, so the research, the qualitative aspect of it kind of came from me asking questions from an interview script. So it was a set design script that to kind of dig out all the hours and be able to parcel them into different categories. So there was a set grip to that. It wasn't like it wasn't open-ended questions for the most part. They were relatively close-ended. But that allowed me to compare to other sports, but to that 2001 study.
It'd be really interesting. I think just to share a story from my side here. I know Daryl Nelson, who's the national team strength coach here, has told this story before, where, you know, he'll sit in a room and, like, you know, very one of the very first workouts or whatever, he'll have the guys there, or maybe they're just getting to know each other or whatever, and he'll say, how many have played multiple sports until you came here this year? And he said, you know, this was several years ago, every hand in the room went up, that these were multi-sport athletes who are coming in. And I think the national team sort of uses that as a criteria too.
Yeah.
Here. Now I'm guessing, like you found, I'm guessing that's starting to change just because of the setup of the youth sport landscape and that sort of that FOMO of, you know, exactly. If I'm not on the train now, I don't know that I'll get there.
Johnny's got a skills coach, so Bobby needs one, and an hour more a week. Yeah, it's scary. It truly is scary. That's I don't want to say it's part of the reason that I wanted to move on to the private sector, but it is definitely something I want to focus on now that I'm in the private sector. Is that long term athletic development? The USADM is awesome, an awesome example of promoting the multi sport culture. Hockey Canada is trying. They're trying to get that out there, but I just think there's a lot of politics at the lower levels that the grassroots isn't really being affected by it quite yet, because just local and regional coaches, they have their hands in so many different pots, because they're the head coach, they're the strength coach, they're the skills coach, they're the skating coach, and then the kids sign up for these year-long lessons in spring hockey, summer hockey, so they can't get away from that coach, and in fear that they won't make a team, they won't make a AAA team, and then they think that if that happens at 10 years old, then they're never going to play professional hockey.
Yeah, and that's something I've heard too, is that Hockey Canada is scrambling a little bit in terms of, you know, like looking at the numbers and saying, okay, this is working, the ADM is working, so
And it's the hockey, like I said, I will say Hockey Canada is trying to do its part. Tom Rennie, the president, has put out multiple statements promoting multiple sports. I know in hearsay by a third person, someone told me that they had a private conversation with Tom, and he was personally concerned about the lack of athleticism in some of our elite athletes. So that it's not just out there for promotional pieces and commercials to look good, feel good stories. He actually does have a concern for that, and it is something that he's trying to change. And because part of the reason that I started digging into my research as well was working with the national junior team, the elite of the elite in Hockey Canada, the best 19-year-olds in the world, and one of the kids could not throw a baseball. And we were warming up, and I kind of tried to have fun with the warm up, because I was there in a kind of a blended role of strength conditioning and athletic therapist. So I was in charge of the warm ups and things like that. And I would try to have fun with it. We had a big open space, the basketball net. So we would play basketball, we would throw a football around, and the football fell to his feet, and he could not pick it up to throw it. And I thought he'd maybe left-handed, trying to throw with his right side just to goof around and laugh. And like, he didn't understand why we were laughing. And then once I dug into it, he could not throw. And because he had never thrown a football in his life. And that player ended up less than a year later having double hip surgery and two pretty big shoulder injuries. So like said, down the line. So and he's never really cracked an NHL level roster, even though he was high first round pick. He was on the national junior team. Like, he was an elite player, and just the lack of athleticism eventually caught up to him.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, and I think you could probably pull up a dozen stories like that too. So I think we're all sort of on the same page now, in that this is an issue and that it does need to be addressed. Like you said, at the grassroots level, And this is where your transition into the private sector sort of comes in into play. How do you see that playing out? And, you know, from what you know now, what are some of the steps that need to be taken or that you plan to take it to get kids going at the younger ages, or to develop athletes rather than just hockey players?
So I'll be helping out on at the board level with one of the local AAA organizations with parent sessions, coach sessions, and obviously player sessions, wanting to focus on just fundamental movement, physical literacy type stuff. Because as we know, the kids are sitting at their desks for 6-8 hours a day. Then they go sit, play Fortnite for a couple hours a day, sitting in their couches, and they go bend over playing hockey. So I think there's a big critical element of physical literacy that's being missed. And one of the big takeaways I took actually from the IYCA this summer was it's fine for us to talk about all the problems and list off what's wrong, but unless there's an action plan, unless we're actually going to go out there and try to put some skin in the game and fix it, then what's the point, right? Then we're just wasting our breath. So I wanted to get involved at that board level to educate coaches that they need. I'm not even a proponent necessarily of them hanging their skates up, like used to be the mantra, like, okay, when the season's over, hang your skates up, miss them for a couple months. I think there is a skill element that needs to be promoted. I think they probably do need to be on their skates most months. I don't know, all months, that's probably a push. But I do think they need to be touching the puck most months a year. But there's no reason that they can't go play soccer, baseball, lacrosse. There are lots of sports with a lot of crossover. And maybe even more importantly, no crossover to hockey that would benefit them from a psychosocial aspect, seeing different coaches, learning different styles that they look up to, different adults that they want to emulate, as well as different peer groups. So they're not kind of pigeonholed into one peer group their whole life. Then they follow them to schools. Like it's, you know, here in Windsor, the AAA team, they're involved with an academy. So then this academy then goes to school together, and then they practice together, and then they do their social events together. So they're not really getting outside of this little network. So they really get pigeonholed, and then that definitely can have a negative spin on their self-identity. So they see themselves as a hockey player because that's all they know. That's all they're around. That's all they see. They only see hockey coaches. Their parents really only have one thing to talk to them about, and that's how hockey's going. Mm-hmm. So then once hockey falls off, and 99.9% of them hockey will at some point fall off, they don't, then they're lost. And and I've seen it at the OHL level. Like they get there because they're good enough. They're big enough. They're strong enough. They're fast enough. But maybe they're not good enough to hang in there, or maybe they're not good enough to progress past there, and they get lost. They don't know. Even if they are good enough, they come in at 16 years old and they go from being the best player in the region, if not the province, if not the country, and all of a sudden they're the 12th, 13th best forward on the team, being healthy scratched or playing three shifts a game or things like that. And it's a huge knock to their self-confidence, and they don't know how to handle it. And that's something that I feel like I've evolved in over the years is when I was young and came in and I was more rah, rah, and okay, no, like do your workout. Like I don't care. And I've used some expletives that I don't want to use here, but, just get it done. Not really digging into why they don't want to do it because they feel like they're not strong enough to compete against these 18, 19 year olds in the gym with them. Because they're out there competing on the ice, not feeling good enough. Now they're in the gym, not feeling good enough. So something I really dug in on was kind of trying to separate those groups, putting them in a spot where they're going to get confident and feel confidence in themselves. Actually, your shirt just really the play aspect.
Yeah.
Of growing up too is huge. So that was one of my findings, was that the play has reduced like drastically because there's only so many hours in a day, right? That 24-hour clock, you add in competition, add in practice, add in workouts, like that the play element is where a lot of that is being taken from. And I, one of the national junior teams that I worked with, that was what one of the coaches said, was that players are lacking creativity and skill. And that's where they're going to develop that is in that play element. So I know you probably heard of Jeremy Frisch. I think he's out of New Jersey. So that's, I love the stuff that he puts out on social media, and that's kind of stuff that I want to use is some of his just little obstacle courses and thing, letting kids be kids and letting them play. And I know when your talk, more of the hands-on segment at the IYCA with just introducing games and things like that at that level, at the youth level is huge, because most of these kids don't know how to play and they're looking for instruction at all times because they don't know any different. So I think that's an immediately important thing that coaches could put into their programming right now. Even a head coach doesn't have to be a strength coach. It's just letting kids go out and play, do their own thing. Go, it might be a game of tag, right? That's a great game, a great dynamic warm up for the kids that they get to go out and play and be themselves.
Right, and I mean, like I just presented on this, the value of games and the value of gameplay as training. So I mean, we could go down that road, but I guess I have a question. This is maybe a experience that you've shared too. So I have, you know, at my facility here, we work with some, skaters, right? So figure skaters, I would say, are kind of more in that group where it is an early specialization sport, but I have some high school aged skaters and synchronized skaters, and it's to the point where, it's like the window of things that we can do has closed so far where I'm afraid to have them play tag. And maybe this is just me, because I'm afraid to have them play tag because they may roll an ankle, injure a knee, hurt a shoulder, you know? And so at this point, it's almost like we're doing less training and just more damage control. I mean, these are athletes that are far down the, you know, the road in an early specialization sport. So, you know, they've been in a boot 20 hours a week for, you know, the last 10 years, 12 years. And so do you ever find that where, you know, you're working with these national team guys, or if you're with the world junior team or whichever team you were working with, or even when you were with the Spitfires, you ever like question whether it's okay to be playing those other things? My first thought is like, unfortunately, like putting them in games like this or in little competitions off outside the rink is a risk at this point for some people.
Yeah, it's a living in the gray kind of question and scenario, because you can have your super structured, very safe element to it that's, you know, is going to be fine. Then there's stuff you know you wouldn't have them do. Even like in hockey, the biggest warm-up element that I, be honest, we get a lot of benefit out of is playing sorball and playing soccer, where they're just trying to keep the ball up, right? They're, mm-hmm. obviously there's different ways to play, but they absolutely die for it. And I know one of the national teams that I worked with, it was kind of an issue because that's all they wanted to do. They didn't want to do an activation. They didn't want to do a structured stretch. It was getting to the rink, throwing their warm-up stuff on as quick as they can, grabbing the soccer ball. And we were in the Czech Republic at the time, and it was almost distraction level. Like, they didn't want to take their sticks. They just want to go play store ball because it was beautiful outside. It's in August in Czech, so it's 30 degrees Celsius, so 90 degrees Fahrenheit outside. They just want to be outside. They want to be in the sun. They want to go play. And like watching them play, they were getting a great warm up. They were moving. They were lunging to get to the balls and things like that. But one of the kids slept on a pebble and cut his hand. And so again, dual role, athletic therapist, strength coach, I was responsible for bandaging up his hand. I was like, well, okay, we're in a position here where I could tell the coach that you cut your hand. It wasn't a big deal. He didn't need stitches or anything like that, but it was going to affect how he was going to hold the stick. I was like, but if I tell coach that this could affect you playing, he's probably going to eliminate Sorbal.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, don't tell. He's like, I'll be fine. I'll get through it. I'll work through it however I have to. He's like, because he knew that if that was taken away from the team, that it would kill them. And like, it was kind of goofy how much it meant to them. So I had to balance that. Okay, is it worth them playing versus not playing? I opted to allow them to play and have for my 12 years in doing this, even though kids have rolled ankles, minor stuff, but rolled ankles and done little things. So I think there's an element of risk that needs to be involved to really get some benefit out of it. Obviously, there's a time, and I was, especially with the Spitz, I'll be hard on them with doing their structured activation, their structured stuff, but allowing them to do that unstructured stuff to get into positions. Because obviously in game scenarios, they're going to get into a lot of those positions that they could get hurt in. So I wanted them to at least dig towards those positions.
Yeah, man, it's so...
Yeah.
Do no harm, right, is the...
Yeah, yeah.
But
that's the mantra.
But at the same time, it's really hard to sort of walk that line and do things that are, because to get any kind of adaption, you need to be on the edge, right? You need to be sort of pushing the envelope a little bit. But it's just a matter of like, can you do it in a controlled environment? Like, yeah, you could do the controlled activations and mobility drills and that kind of thing. But I just don't think you get as much out of that as you would play. But again, I think a lot of it just goes back to it, making sure that kids want to compete and want to play stupid little games. Like I was talking about, like when I was a kid, I would throw a tennis ball on the roof and stand as close to the garage as I could and then try to react to it as it comes out. You know, like just stupid stuff like that. And I'll still do that if I'm trying to work through like writer's block or something like that. I'll still play a stupid little game. But it's almost like you said, with the lack of play, unstructured play, it's almost like kids don't know how to compete unless there's a referee there.
Yeah. Unless there's a scoreboard and a time clock, like it gets to the point where like, even during warmups, like a lot of the activations and stuff that I would do, especially for individual type stuff, if a kid was coming in for therapy, it was more of a one-on-one scenario. I try to tell them, okay, I want you to do 5 activation exercises instead of giving them the 5, just to see what they come up with. Obviously, this is after a period of time where I've given them a kind of a recipe book of how to add things together. But I want them to be able to do that, because so many times I'm sitting in my office, okay, what should I do? And I give them an exercise and they come back 3 seconds later. Okay, done that. What should I do next? I think just do 5. They'll go do 1, and then I kind of watch them through my window, and you see their hamster wheel turning in their head, and then they come in by, okay, I got 1 done, but what's another one? What should I do next? Because they can't formulate that in their heads, and that's something I've really noticed the last 3 or 4 years that I want. And we're talking elite players, like high NHL first round picks that are going to make millions of dollars. They can't put together a simple activation. So it's some little things like that I've really been trying to work on. And it's something that that's part of the going private side. I want to get into their heads is how to be able to put things together so that when they're on their own, they can.
Yeah. And so that's where I want to go next. Let's wrap up with this. It's easy, like you said earlier, it's easy to talk about what the issue is and what the problem is. But it's harder to kind of make your way towards a solution. What's the action plan here? You're obviously passionate about this and it's something that you want to correct and that you want to have an impact on. What's the plan going forward here? How do you see yourself making a change at the private level?
Like I said, sitting on the board, Windsor's kind of a unique city because there's a couple different AAA centers. So AAA obviously is the highest level. And then under those, there are different associations for the non-AAA. So for all the house league, more recreational style players. So that's hockey. I want to get involved with other sports too, because it's just as big a problem in soccer, in basketball, in tennis. It's a widespread problem. But really getting education out there to parents and coaches. The players are going to do whatever the parents and coaches want them to do, whatever the parents and coaches sign them up for, or they feel like they have to do. So I think if we can really implement some strategies within those organizations, then it will help the information that the kids are forced to do, right? Or the things that the kids are forced to do. So I think that's the first step, is really getting skin in the game that way, by sitting on those boards, by having those conversations, not just by throwing stuff out on social media and hoping that it sticks, by sitting in the room at the table and looking people in the eye. Because I think some of the work that a lot of people do on social media is amazing. I've stolen a lot of ideas from there. I'm not a big poster on social media, even though I'm always on there. But I think where I see, because I'm not that guy, I don't like putting myself out there quite yet. That's a little bit outside of my comfort zone bubble that I'm working on. But sitting on the board, and having the conversations, that's where I see myself helping out. And I would ask other strength coaches, therapists, parents, other people listening to this that they're obviously have a level of interest to do the same. And maybe it's not a year long commitment where they're sitting, but it's an hour commitment where they sit down, and most organizations would love to have that help, that expertise, come in and share information. Whether or not it initiates a change, who knows? But if enough people go out talking to enough people, and maybe it takes a certain organization to hear two or three times from two or three different people to be like, hey, maybe there is something we can do to tweak how we run things at these young ages. And it might be as simple as instituting with their summer leagues, because I wouldn't expect a coach to give up something that makes them money. That's probably not realistic. But maybe for the games they play on the weekends that are hockey, maybe throughout the week they can practice playing soccer or do a group team building activity where they're playing baseball, things like that, to help get them involved in other things. But just some ideas.
Yeah, I like that, getting involved like at the administrative level. We think a lot as strength coaches, and I think that's mainly who's listening here. As strength coaches, we want to get hands-on and start, you know, working with individuals and with teams, and like you said, getting them involved in other sports. But at the administrative level, you have the opportunity to touch the coaches or the players who wouldn't really otherwise be interested in it. You know, you got coaches who maybe don't buy into that and want to be hard driving with hockey all the time. But if there's administrative changes that sort of put them in a position where, you know, maybe there is a mandatory, off ice program that's not hockey specific or whatever it is, whatever ends up being implemented, you have a real chance to affect a lot of change in that way. So that's a great approach. And for anybody who's listening, I think you're absolutely right. Spending an hour, there's a bunch of reasons you should do that. You should sit down with your local organization, especially if you're, if you're around youth or even like maybe the high school state association. And number one, put yourself out there as an expert, which is good for you as a, if you're in business or whatever. And then you're also sharing good information along the way. So it's a win-win. You really should get involved there and just find out where opportunities are for you to talk about that and to help out in that way.
And from the private sector standpoint, like putting yourself out there for an hour, having that 1 hour conversation, right, and maybe it turns into more than that, but parents are going to see how much you care. Coaches are going to see how much you care. And then that eventually will drive revenue to your private business. I'm not saying that's the goal for everyone or most people. Obviously, as strength coaches, usually we're looking for ways to increase revenue. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's That's something that I know Brett Bartholomew, he talks about a little bit, and Ron McCreefree. It's kind of faux pas to talk about those things in our culture, but it's a necessary. We have to buy groceries just the same as everyone else. So kind of selfishly, that's part of where I was going with that, with sitting on the board, is I want parents to see that I care about your child, and your child developing physically and psychosocially. And this is how I'm doing it. I'm volunteering my time, but if it's something you're interested in, then this is where I'm at.
Yeah. So. No, I think that's perfect. And maybe it's taboo, but you know, if you aren't in business long enough as a strength coach, then you're going to be selling insurance and not talking much about it.
Exactly. And exactly. You're out of the business. You're not helping anyone at that point. So.
Yeah. Well, Joey, this has been awesome. I feel like we could talk for a while now. It is easy to just point out problems, but I think, you know, we've got some action steps here. And I think the big takeaway from this is for you as a young strength coach, or even if, you know, we have NCAA and NHL strength coaches listening to this, talk about a position or a platform for you to get active and to talk with your local organizations. I mean, as an NHL strength coach or as a NCAA strength coach, that goes a long, long way. So great idea there, great takeaway. And yeah, I really appreciate your time and your expertise on this. And it was a really good chat.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was great to chat. Like I say, we can probably go for hours talking about this stuff, but it was great to get some of that out there, and hopefully some strength coaches get engaged.
Yeah. If anybody wants to get in touch with you, is there a way to do that, or anything social media? I know you said you don't put yourself out there too much.
Yeah, I'm on social media, Joey G AT. Email garland_joey@hotmail.com. Either one is good. I'm on social media a lot. I just don't put a ton out there. Usually it's my kids or dogs more than anything, or retweeting some other stuff. And once we get up and running here with the facility I'll be managing, I'm hoping to be a lot more active and get some good educational pieces out there.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. Well, thank you again, and really enjoyed our chat, and we'll be looking for you. We'll probably be looking to hear more from you soon.
Awesome. Okay. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Joey.
All right, guys, that's going to wrap up episode 73 of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Thank you to Joey Garland for joining us and taking some time with us today. Really a great conversation. I know it's one that I get fired up about, and you know, anybody who's developing youth athletes and anybody who's seeing the effects of underdeveloped youth athletes should really be tuned into this and sort of be coming up with some solutions on your own too. So thanks again, Joey, and we look forward to hearing more from you soon. Guys, head to hockeystrengthandconditioning.com for more great resources on training hockey players. And until then, be sure to train smart and check out hockeystrengthandconditioning.com, the world's greatest resource for training hockey players. We'll talk to you soon.